Well, last time we read about the deep hatred Joseph's brothers had for him because of their father's gross favoritism of Joseph over his brothers. So when the opportunity presented itself, his 10 older brothers, they conspired to kill Joseph. But then they decided to sell him as a slave to some Ishmaelite merchants on their way to Egypt instead. So let's begin in Genesis 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. Joseph is 17 years old when he arrives in Egypt. It's no accident that Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard, is the one who buys Joseph. God had a plan for Joseph's life, and this was all part of it. Working for Potiphar, Joseph would have the rare but very important opportunity to become acquainted with Egyptian ways. He'll learn how the affairs of state are conducted in Egypt, since Potiphar is an official of Pharaoh. Have you ever seen that take place in your life, where you question why things are working out a certain way, and then later you see how it prepared you in a special way for something else that you could never have guessed was coming? Well, that's what's happening with Joseph. He is a house slave for this man Potiphar. He has no reason to see himself doing anything else in life at this point, but he's going to one day be in the top echelon of Egyptian government. And the protocols and procedures that he's picking up in Potiphar's house are going to be important preparation for that future work that God has for him. So the next time you're scratching your head about why you're stuck doing what you're doing, remember that the Lord may be preparing you for something he has for you to do in the future. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer of his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the household and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. I want us to notice that the prominent character in these verses is the Lord. It says, the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with him. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had. At first, it looks like Joseph is going to be all alone in Egypt, abandoned by his brothers, sold as a slave, written off as dead. He has no family, no friends. He's lost everything. He's being held captive in a foreign land. But Joseph is not alone. The Lord's with him. And this is the first thing the writer wants us to see. He wants us to know that Joseph has not been abandoned or forgotten by God. Our circumstances can be telling us that we've been left for dead, but we're never alone. God is always with us. Hebrews 13:5, the Lord said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. God is our treasure and security. Real security can't be found in friends or family or position or money. All these things can be taken from us or forsake us. Rather than letting his circumstances crush him, Joseph perseveres and he prospers when others would have shriveled up and died. Why? What was it that kept him going? I believe he reminded himself that the Lord was with him. And this is what the writer drives home for us. The Lord is with him. What a profound difference that truth can make in our life when we're faced with what would otherwise be overwhelming circumstances. The Lord is with you. You are not alone. It says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. Joseph is a handsome young man, which didn't escape the notice of Potiphar's wife. She tries to get him to come to bed with her. Verse 8, but he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He's not greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph gives two reasons for his refusal of Potiphar's wife's advances. First, he refuses out of respect for his master, Potiphar. He can't imagine violating Potiphar's trust by taking the only thing that has not been given to him, Potiphar's wife. Let me ask you a question. How much value do you and I place on the trust people put in us? Joseph put a very high value on the trust people had in him. Trust is one of the most valuable things anyone can give us. George MacDonald once said, "To be trusted is a greater compliment than to be loved." To be trusted is a greater compliment than to be loved. If we valued people's trust more, we would work harder to keep it. Value the trust people put in you above your selfish passions. The second thing that he said is he refuses out of obedience to God. Joseph sees this ultimately as a sin against the Lord. David echoes the same sentiments many years later when he writes in the famous poem about his own failure in this area with Bathsheba. In Psalm 51:4, David said, "Against you, you only, Lord, have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight." Verse 10, "And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her." Day after day, it said. Notice the relentless pursuit of Joseph by Potiphar's wife. Temptation is like that. It comes again and again, and it turns the heat up, making it more difficult to refuse as time goes on. If we were only tempted once, we refuse, and that was the end of it, things would be easy. Temptation grinds us down through its relentlessness. Being tempted is not an indication of how bad you are. We all share similar desires and weaknesses. In fact, the intensity and repetition of the temptation can be more an indication of the goodness of a person rather than the badness of a person. I've always liked the insightful observation C.S. Lewis made about that when he wrote, "A silly idea is current that good people do not know what temptation means. This is an obvious lie. Only those who try to resist temptation know how strong it is. A man who gives in to temptation after 5 minutes simply doesn't know what it would have been like an hour later. That's why bad people, in one sense, know very little about badness. They've lived a sheltered life by always giving in. We never find out the strength of the evil impulse inside us until we try to fight it. And Christ, because he was the only man who never yielded to temptation, is also the only man who knows to the full what temptation means." It says he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or be with her. Joseph's example is a good one for us to follow to overcome temptation. He made up his mind before he was tempted that he was not going to sin. There's no wavering about that with Joseph. It's critical that we do the same if we're serious about overcoming temptation and not sinning. Oftentimes, we're really not committed to not sinning. So we're easy prey for the tempter. We're almost hoping that we'll be tempted. And when we have that kind of mindset, we're going down. Second, Joseph avoided compromising situations. He didn't just refuse her advances. He wouldn't even be around her. If he knew she was in a particular area of the house, then he would not go into that area until she was gone. We sometimes wonder why we fall into temptation, but if we're honest with ourselves, we can see how we set ourselves up for failure by putting ourselves in a vulnerable position. Remove yourself from the environment in which you're tempted as much as you possibly can. Joseph was aware of both his own weaknesses and the weaknesses of others, and he tried to avoid situations that might cause problems. Third, I want us to see that we can set ourselves up for failure before the big temptation comes through a series of small compromises along the way. And this is something that Joseph did not do. He did not compromise in little areas. Take the example of the married person who has an affair. It's not usually something that happens in an unguarded moment. It's something that the person has allowed to grow in their heart long before the fall actually happens. Be smart about what you're giving ground to in your life. Be a long-distance liver rather than a life sprinter. Live for a lifetime rather than a moment. Think about the long-term impact of your choices and your decisions and your actions. rather than how it may or may not satisfy your immediate desire in the moment. Verse 11, it says, "But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me.' But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house." The most effective way of escaping temptation is to turn the other direction and run. In this case, literally. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 6:18, "Flee from sexual immorality." That means to hightail it out of there. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "No temptation has overcome you that is not common to man, but God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it." Sometimes the way of escape is the door, as fast as you can go. 13. "And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, 'See, he's brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house.' Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house.'" The ESV translation of this passage is unfortunate because it makes it sound like Joseph is being accused of laughing at her. And that's not what she's accusing him of at all. The word translated laugh from the Hebrew can also mean play with, to have amusement with, to fool around with. It was a euphemism for having sex. Humiliated by Joseph's refusal of her, she fabricates a lie, claiming that Joseph tried to rape her, but ran off when she started screaming. 19, as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Well, things have taken a new bad turn for Joseph. First, his brothers sell him as a slave, but he's purchased by a man who puts him in charge of his entire household, obviously giving Joseph a far more comfortable lifestyle than he would have had as an ordinary slave. Then, when he's at the top of his game in his position, his master's wife makes a play for him repeatedly, then accuses him of rape because he refuses her, and now his master has thrown him into prison. It's unusual that Potiphar throws Joseph into prison, though, instead of having him executed. That would have been the customary thing to do with a troublesome slave. Potiphar may have had doubts about the truthfulness of his wife's story. We don't know, but what's obvious is that the Lord is again with Joseph, even in the middle of this terribly unjust situation, looking out for him, protecting him. We might ask, how can we think God is with Joseph when he's treated so unjustly? And the answer is because he's still alive rather than dead. We can easily extend that same idea for application in our own life. Your life may look really bad right now. Are you still alive? Then thank the Lord, because it could be worse. It could be a lot worse. Finally, verse 21. "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed." What's the phrase we see repeated again and again here? The Lord was with Joseph. And the same story that took place in Potiphar's house happens in the prison. The blessing of God is upon Joseph. The prison warden, recognizing God's hand on Joseph, began to give him responsibilities, and with each one he gave Joseph, he shined. He had the golden touch. And before long, the warden had entrusted the entire prison to Joseph's care. the prisoner, Joseph, is running the prison. Well, in closing, there's one thing that is constant throughout all of the turmoil of Joseph's life. This one thing is repeated again and again throughout this chapter. The Lord is with Joseph. That's the difference maker in his life. It was this that gave him the strength to face the many difficulties in his life. It was this that enabled him to overcome the discouragement that certainly came with watching the things that he worked so hard for be taken from him again and again. It was this that gave him the strength of character to refuse what would have otherwise been overwhelming temptations. Our life can be flying apart in every way imaginable. But if this one thing is true, we can go through it. We will survive it. We will overcome it if God is with you. You may find yourself sold as a slave and carried away to a foreign land. You may find yourself unjustly accused of an awful crime and put in prison with no hope of ever being released. But if God is with you, it's going to be okay. We're not guaranteed an easy life. In fact, life can kick us right in the teeth sometimes. But the Lord is with us, and that's the difference maker. The last thing I want us to reflect on in closing is Joseph's attitude. Joseph was a slave and then a prisoner. He excelled in both situations. The situation he was in did not determine how he was going to live and conduct himself. He was living for something higher. We can thrive in whatever situation we're put in if we have the right attitude and have our focus on the right thing. We need to see our life as part of God's bigger story. We need to make everything we do in life an act of worship. Colossians 3:23 says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ."